Hey everybody, Rob Maurer here, and today we are doing some digging on a very interesting situation that's unfolding here in the United States. This is going to have a ton of impact on the renewable energy and automotive industries, and that is the renewable fuel standard. We've also got some exciting news on Tesla Energy, electric vehicle incentives in China, and a couple other items as well. Quick look at the markets. The NASDAQ today with a strong day, up 1.6%. Tesla not riding that wave, finishing down 0.4% to close at $705.21. All right, we're going to start off with the renewable fuel standard. There is some Tesla-related news on this today. To really understand the news, I think it requires a fair amount of background information, so we're going to go through all that. I do think it's very interesting, and the implications on any changes here are pretty extreme. So we'll start off with the news. We've got a headline from Reuters this afternoon saying that, quote, Biden administration leans on Tesla for guidance in renewable fuel policy reform, end quote. So at first glance, that might seem interesting because the Biden administration thus far has largely ignored Tesla in public. That's kind of what Reuters starts off with in this article. But they say that privately, the Biden administration has leaned on Tesla to help craft a new policy to allow electric vehicles to benefit from the nation's lucrative renewable fuel subsidies, according to emails reviewed by Reuters. So, okay, might sound like a pretty normal thing, engaging with automakers to discuss fuel standards, and it is. Later on, the article says that Biden administration is consulting with all the major players on these sort of things. So aside from some of the lack of recognition drama associated here, is this really all that big of news? Or is this just about emission standards and regulatory credit stuff that we've kind of known about and talked about before? Well, turns out no, and I think in a way, Reuters is kind of burying the lead here because they go on to later say that, quote, the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, which administers the RFS, the Renewable Fuel Standard, is expected to unveil proposed changes to the policy sometime this year, defining new winners and losers in a multi-billion dollar market for credits, known as RINs, that has supported corn growers and biofuels producers for more than a decade, end quote. Okay, so this is different from emission standards, which target some certain miles per gallon for a company's automotive fleet. Of course, we know that Tesla has historically traded those types of regulatory credits. It ends up being a few hundred million dollars a quarter, usually. Some of that's in the US, some of that is international. What we're talking about here with RINs, this is a completely different thing. So you may or may not remember that we have actually talked about this before. This was in May of last year, when Reuters at the time had reported that, quote, the Biden administration is expected to review the EPA applications and lay out how electric vehicles could qualify for the tradable credits under the renewable fuel standard this summer, two sources said, end quote. Since then, it looks like nothing really happened with that. And now we have Reuters report saying that the Biden administration has been engaging Tesla in the conversations about how to shape this policy. So when we had that report last year, I did a whole bunch of work on this and it never really made sense to bring it up on the podcast again. Now we've got that opportunity. And I think this will help illustrate how important any changes to this policy could be. All right, so what are these credits? What are RINs? RIN just stands for Renewable Identification Number. So it's just the identification for that credit. The EPA put together a quick concept map for how these credits work. Basically, if you produce something that the EPA classifies as a renewable fuel, that will generate a credit or an RIN. And then at the end of the day, those credits are used to meet a renewable volume obligation or RVO. Oftentimes, these so-called renewable fuels will be blended with non-renewable fuels, so it kind of depends on what your ratio is there. And then there's this whole credit market, so if you're a surplus producer of these RINs, you can sell them to those entities that have not met their renewable volume obligation. So, okay, these RINs fall into different categories based on, I believe, the type of renewable fuel that's being produced. So there are four types, D3 through D6. We can see here that D3 is the most valuable, that's the blue line. And those right now, you can see over the five-year history, are trading at a five-year high of about $3.20 per credit. So, okay, I saw this last year and I thought, hey, that looks pretty good. Tesla's probably producing some renewable fuel, right? They've got some solar panels on superchargers going into battery electric vehicles. They must be earning some credits here and that could get more lucrative over time. So I went and I read through the requirements for this. There's a whole section on equivalencies. So how many kilowatt hours, for example, relate to 1 gallon of renewable fuel? Great, that's answered here. So 22.6 kilowatt hours of electricity shall represent 1 gallon of renewable fuel with an equivalence value of 1.0. So, okay, great. Basically 22.6 kilowatt hours of electricity equals one credit, and those would be the D3 type of credits. At the current price of those credits, that'd be about 14 cents per kilowatt hour. So at this point in the research, I'm thinking, okay, great, Tesla's probably getting some of these credits each quarter from solar production on superchargers, probably not a huge amount, but could grow over time. Then I have the thought, well, wait, Tesla's got solar panels on houses that are fueling their cars. Seems like that should probably count for someone somewhere. So I emailed the EPA last year, tried to figure this out, and they got back to me and they said that, well, first of all, solar power does not fall in the renewable biogas definition in the renewable fuel standard. Okay, makes sense, but we're talking about renewable fuel here, not just renewable biogas, right? Plus, we just looked at the conversion over from electricity, which is not biogas. Plus, it's just very obvious that in some cases, solar is creating renewable fuel for these electric vehicles. So then I go and I look at the definition of a renewable identification number, so these RAN credits, and it says it's a unique number generated to represent a volume of renewable fuel. Okay, doesn't seem like there's any disqualifier there. That's the 22.6 kilowatt hours that we had talked about. There's also a section for verified RIN, and it also just says an RIN generated by a renewable fuel producer that was subject to an audit. Okay, so again, nothing yet, but then we finally go and we see what the definition of a renewable fuel is, and the EPA says that it means a fuel which meets all of the requirements of paragraph one, and then finally we get our disqualifier because section one of paragraph one says that renewable fuel must be fuel that is produced from renewable biomass. So 22 kilowatt hours of solar produced energy for a battery electric vehicle generates nothing. If Tesla were to produce what the EPA defines as biogas and use that to generate 22 kilowatt hours of energy, that would result in an RIN that's worth about $3. Even that part is only technically true though, because the EPA told me in their email that while the EPA has approved a general pathway for electricity generated from biogas collected from landfills, they have not finalized the oversight and compliance mechanism that would protect the integrity of ERINs generated through this pathway. So, my understanding is that basically at the end of the day, what this ends up being is a credit system pretty much entirely revolving around ethanol. Now, everyone's got their own opinions on that, how things should be subsidized or not subsidized, but if we're talking about renewable fuel, it seems like a major miss and a disincentive to not be counting solar, especially when you've already got a conversion for electricity mapped into the system. So I think that background mostly catches us up. The only other thing that I want to add to this before we get back to the news on this from today is that this RIN credit market is a huge market. The Organization for American Fuel and Petrochemical Manufacturers estimated in the middle of last year that the cost of compliance in 2021 would be $25 to $30 billion. Unfortunately, I couldn't find a more updated figure, but Reuters article last year mentioned it as an $18 billion market. So this is a big deal, and any changes to this policy could have significant impacts for the energy and automotive industries. So that all brings us back to this report from Reuters today, which again, I felt like buried the lead a little bit. They continued on to say that, quote, "Early signs are that the administration is leaning toward a rule that benefits car makers like Tesla, giving them the greatest access to so-called ERINs or electric RINs. But the reform could also spread the subsidy to related industries too, like car charging companies and landfills that supply renewable biogas to power plants, according to industry players," end quote. Reuters says that back on the morning of Biden's inauguration in January 2021, an EPA staffer had emailed a Tesla lobbyist to set up a meeting on how to incorporate electric cars into the RFS, renewable fuel standard, according to documents seen by Reuters. They say that Tesla is seeking changes to the RFS that will allow them to earn renewable fuel credits based on kilowatt hours driven or similar metrics, according to two sources familiar with the plan, which sounds like could even extend beyond the production aspect, which the current RIN credit system seems to be more based around. So any potential adjustments here could be much bigger than, okay, just counting solar. And if you think about it in terms of efficiency, when you're comparing an electric vehicle to a gas-powered vehicle that's running on ethanol or something like that, well, pretty much regardless of the energy source for the electricity, the EV is going to win out. So any changes here are going to be fascinating to follow. And right now, because it is more production-based, obviously automakers aren't really all that involved in it. But Reuters has a quote here from the Director of Federal Policy for the American Biogas Council. She says, quote, "We have heard through the grapevine that car companies are really, really going to like this rule," end quote. So the energy market, very complex. There are all sorts of different incentives mixed through different areas. But that is what I know about this particular one. If anyone else has any knowledge or insight that they can share, please do that in the comments. And we'll continue to watch for any updates on this because, again, I do think this can be very impactful. All right, next we do have a quick update on electric vehicle incentives in China. Reuters today also reporting that China is considering extending a purchase tax exemption for new energy vehicles, which I believe was set to expire at the end of this year, though I can't remember. China did make some changes around the COVID reopening to some of the structures of those things. Remember, they added a 10,000 RMB subsidy at that time with trade-in, but either way, would be a win for Tesla if this EV tax exemption does get extended. All right, next up, we've got some pretty cool news on Tesla Energy. Electrek today reporting that Tesla has partnered with PG&E in California to launch a new version of their virtual power plant, which they have been testing. And this time it will include compensation for those that are participating. So Tesla apparently says, quote, "Become a part of the largest distributed battery in the world and help keep California's energy clean and reliable. Opt into the Tesla virtual power plant with PG&E and your power wall will be dispatched when the grid needs emergency support." Through the Emergency Load Reduction Program pilot, you will receive $2 for every additional kilowatt hour your Powerwall delivers during an event. Adjust your backup reserve to set your contribution while maintaining backup energy for outages." End quote. So $2 per kilowatt hour, that is a really nice rate. But of course, during emergencies, that's probably when you want your Powerwall the most. Unless you have solar generating energy at that time and your Powerwalls are full, then that's great. Or if you're confident you're not going to need your entire reserve, and in aggregate across all Powerwalls can definitely add up. So it's exciting to see the virtual power plant concept become more established now. And for me, I've never been a huge proponent of vehicle to grid, but hey, if you're getting $2 per kilowatt hour, that starts to become pretty compelling if you're not going to be using your entire capacity. And especially so, I would say, with Tesla now doing a lot more LFP, lithium iron phosphate cells, the number of cycles and the degradation from them should be less concerning for an application like vehicle to grid. So it would be exciting if Tesla was able to offer that even just for those lithium iron phosphate vehicles. Of course, it requires a lot of other engineering. And Elon just did say in that part 3 interview that we had talked through yesterday that they're trying to reduce complexity as much as they can. All right, next up, we've got a couple of quick updates on the Texas-made Model Y. It has started to show up in inventory on Tesla's site, so not having to be texted by Tesla to have access. Looks like just a few vehicles so far in Arizona and Florida, but a sign that Tesla is likely to continue going that route for selling these cars. Then you may remember we had talked about the acceleration boost showing up in the app for the Texas-made Model Y. Spoken Reviews has noted that that has now disappeared. I mentioned that as a possibility. It looks like that was just, at least right now, a mistake from Tesla. Doesn't mean that won't change later, but Tesla leaving it at the 5.0 seconds for now with no acceleration boost option. All right, and then the last thing on the Texas-made Model Y, there is a Redditor yesterday who was saying that they have been assigned a VIN for their long-range Model Y that indicates that it is made in Austin. They shared a screenshot of the relevant portion of the VIN. The 11th digit does have an A, so that's Austin built. And they show their configuration here saying it's long range. So maybe Tesla has gotten that 2170 equipment in and up and running at Texas. My best guess is this is probably just a miscommunication or an error somewhere along the way, but something to keep an eye out for if we see other reports of this happening. All right, last couple of things for today. Both Toyota and Subaru are recalling their new electric vehicles, both for the same reason as the Subaru was jointly developed by Toyota. And that reason is sharp turns or sudden braking could cause a bolt to come loose that could then cause wheels to fall off. Toyota is advising that vehicle owners stop driving their vehicle immediately. So point being, recalls aren't just a Tesla thing. We've seen it now with Ford, we've seen it with Toyota, obviously GM, and you could argue that these are more severe issues than really anything that we have seen from Tesla. Lastly, then, we've got an update on GM's Cruise. They have now started charging fares for their driverless rides in San Francisco. We talked how they had gotten approval for this, and I guess that service has started. If anybody is in California, I would definitely be curious if you can check that out. Not sure how publicly available it is, but would love to hear some experiences if people are able to do that. All right, last quick thing. We've been having some issues with YouTube where right away when we publish, the audio or the video or both aren't available for some reason. It says it's done processing on our end. Everything looks good. And then for whatever reason, it's just messed up on YouTube for a few minutes. So if that happens to you, just wait a second, try it again, and it should end up working. No idea why. When I asked YouTube why, they didn't have any idea either. So we're trying to figure it out. Trust me, it's more annoying to me than it is to you. So if that does happen again, just refresh. But that'll wrap it up for today. As always, thank you for listening. Make sure you're subscribed and signed up for notifications. You can also find me on Twitter at Tesla Podcast. And we'll see you tomorrow for the Friday, June 24th episode of Tesla Daily. Thank you.